CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Okay, so this one's about halfway, a thorn in the side Thursday. I mean, what else would we call it when the pig-licking party puts out their contract on America 2.0? Oh, I'm sorry, it's a pledge drive on America. No, it's a sledgehammer on America. Ah, it's a mess. And definitely a thorn in the side, because that's all the for-profit media are talking about today. Shh, I have no intentions of talking about it. Oh, you might make me. But I have no intentions of talking about it. You know, you know how it is, especially with Thorn in the Side Thursday, or even the front porch, Friday on the front porch, which this is sort of because I won't be here tomorrow, so I got my boots up on the front porch rail already, sunshine. This is the horn, for those of you who have never heard it before. It's conversation radio, such as you have never heard before. Radio like no other, except no substitutes. With half my brain tied behind my back and my throat full of OxyContin. Oh, wait, wrong. No. Wrong political spectrum. Sorry. Let's dial it back in a little bit, Bob. Now, you know I'm going to be gone tomorrow, and which is Friday. Then I will also be gone Monday and Tuesday. But we will be broadcasting Monday and Tuesday live, by golly, live from Appalachia Rising. Appalachia Rising in Washington, D.C. Things are coming together. I'd like to be there earlier than Sunday night, but that's the best I can do. Because there's going to be a whole lot going on, and if there are any of you planning to show up, it's going to be something incredibly special. The Georgetown Conference Center will be the locus of the events, and I just saw some of the performance listings. Saturday night will kick off at 7:30. You know, Bo Webb mentioned when we talked on Monday that there would be fun and entertainment as well, and it kicks up in the evening. Saturday night there will be a sermon and singing by the Reverend Billy at 7:30, followed by Michael and Carrie Klein. Larry Gibson's going to be there. Crystal Good. It goes on. Silas House will be there. Wow, Silas House. Sunday morning, there will be a special breakfast with Ben Solee, who is simply amazing, with a cello. I didn't know cellos could do what Ben Solee makes a cello do. Sunday night, it'll be wonderful as well. All kinds of folks. There's a theater piece coming Sunday as well. And then Monday is the big day. And even if you can't be there, you can be there. We've still got to test some of the more extreme tech. But I have no reason not to believe. Does that make sense? Okay. That it's all going to work. And we're pretty old hand at this streaming business, so I'm darn certain that's going to work. And you can check in about 10 a.m. Eastern time. That would be 7 a.m. Pacific. For the proceedings to get underway. It's going to be big. Really, really big. Now, of course, what Appalachia Rising is about, and you can go and learn a lot more at AppalachiaRising.org. Appalachia Rising, just like it, Appalachia, Rising, R-I-S-I-N-G, AppalachiaRising.org. You can learn a lot more. But more than anything else, this is a human rights rally. And frankly, and I'm not trying to piss anybody off. You know, people have limited resources. I would far rather be at this rally than the one coming up the following weekend. I forget what they're calling that. Because this one really is grassroots. When you heard Bo Webb talking Monday night, you heard one of the primary organizers. There's nobody organizing this who has a massive salary. And yet it has been organized with amazing precision. And yet, my congressman, and this is my conundrum, and it's not a conundrum of my creation. This is a conundrum that my congressman has put me in. And it's crazy making. My buddy J.W. Randolph posted over at Appalachian Voices, appvoices.org today. Protecting Appalachians is harming national security. Really? No, not kidding. Now this is a Democrat of nearly 20 terms in the House of Representatives. This is an important seat. There are no unimportant seats in the House this year. I am not some wet behind the ears newbie to the political process. But Nick Rahal has put me in a terrible conundrum. What am I going to do? We need his seat to be in Democratic hands because, you know, for every bit of complaining that any of you, myself included, any of us have done about the Congress of the past 2 years, you think this was bad? Turn it over to the Rapid Lickens. Just do it. Just you do it. If you didn't like this, you're gonna love a Rapid Licken Congress taking power in January of 2011. You're gonna love it. So what do I do? Because Nick Rahal has said that I am a threat to national security. The guy that wants me to vote for him says I am a threat to national security. You got that? Are we square? I'm not making this up. He has signed off on a hateful piece of BS legislation called H.R. 6113. What, I hear you asking already, is H.R. 6113? H.R. 6113 is the Electric Reliability Protection Act. Well, that doesn't sound so bad, does it? I mean, we want reliable electricity and everything. Sure, who does? God knows the citizens of Appalachia who routinely have their power knocked out for weeks at a time and pay massive, massive power bills for the privilege for coal-fired electricity. We'd like for the electricity to be reliable because, you know what, when it's 2 below 0 outside, it's hard to keep your house warm. And nobody likes breathing the stench of burning kerosene. God, I hate a kerosene heater. The Electric Reliability Protection Act. It asserts that the Obama administration's attempt to protect citizens, I'm reading from what J.W. Randolph wrote here, representatives like Joe Rahal assert that the Obama administration's very attempt to protect citizens from toxic drinking water is a threat to national security. Of course, I and others like me and you and we understand the literal existential importance of clean drinking water. No clean drinking water, not many humans. You know, it's really pretty easy. And that's part of the reason that we oppose the wholesale rape. And I don't like that word. I don't like to use it in this context, but it is, of Appalachia and her people. Now, this bill's not going to pass. But it's, again, a dog whistle. This is meant for who? It's meant for the coal mob. Because a dirty judge by the name of Spike Maynard, who swanned around the French Riviera with Don Blankenship and did God knows what with him, when Blankenship had cases before his court, well, he got his ass kicked out of the West Virginia Supreme Court, Spike did. And then Don said, you know what, Spike, that's all right. Dry your eyes. We're going to get you a congressional seat, and we're going to tell people that Nick Joe Rahal don't love coal enough, that he don't worship fervently enough. And then you're going to come out, and you're going to worship real fervent-like. You're going to kiss the hem of my garment. Isn't it going to be fun to be a big coal lick spittle, Spike? And that leaves poor Nick Joe Rahal over on the other side. Wait a minute! I want to be a big coal lick spittle, too! See, looky here! I done signed off on the Electric Reliability Protection Act! I done told everybody that my own constituents are a threat to national security, Nodden! You're listening, according to my congressman, right now, to a threat to national security. Because for no other reason than the fact that I'm sick and tired of having my homeland bombed into oblivion in ways that would make an artillery sergeant in Afghanistan or Iraq blush. This is the conundrum he's put me in. Now, let's go through a little bit more of what J.W. wrote. The lead sponsor of this this misbegotten piece of legislative garbage is a guy from Kentucky named Hal Rogers. He comes from Kentucky's 5th congressional district. Hal Rogers has more mountaintop removal in his district than any other in the United States. Coming in second place is my congressman, Nick Joe Rahal. Here's Hal Rogers' other claim to fame. He has the highest, seventh highest, rather, poverty rate in the United States. 37.3% of children in Hal Rogers' district live below the poverty line, where all of this prosperity from mountaintop removal is happening as we speak. Rogers and Rahal's districts are number one and number two for the most mountaintop removal in the entire country. Here's another fun fact that JW dug up. In the latest Gallup Physical Well-Being Index, Hal Rogers and Nick Rahal topped the charts with a bullet for having the sickest districts in the entire United States, number one and number two. Sickest districts in the United States. Here's the assertions that come with the Electrical Reliability Protection Act. The United States consumes over 1 billion tons of coal annually. Most of this coal is used to meet nearly one half of the nation's electricity needs. The remaining amount of coal is used to produce, among other things, steel, plastic, synthetic fibers, medicines, and coke in China. Oh, wait, I added the in China part. They forgot it. Well, we didn't use 1 billion tons of coal last year, and we're not going to use 1 billion tons of coal this year either. Look at little Mary Sunshine me trying to find the silver lining. But we did use 938 million tons in 2009. And it did account for about less than, well, right around 45% of the electricity in the United States. Not half. So, lie number one. Then there's another assertion. On June 11th, 2009, the Environmental Protection Agency and the Department of the Army issued a memorandum on enhanced surface coal mining pending permit coordination procedures. Well, they actually did that. As of March 2010, under these here new procedures, the Environmental Protection Agency has unlawfully delayed Clean Water Act permits for 190 coal mining operations. Unlawfully delayed? There's only one problem with that. Here's the short answer. It's a lie. Because, you see, the EPA under Section 404 has express oversight over permitting. And it's also specifically written into the Clean Water Act. Then the coal mobsters continue. These 190 coal mining operations are expected to produce over 2 billion tons of coal and support roughly 17,806 new and existing jobs, as well as 81 small businesses. Well, if you if you caught Keith Olbermann's report on the Republican idea of small businesses, you know what that last one means. There's only one problem. Here's the short answer again. It's a lie. At best, 2,992 jobs would come out of this. But the problem is, in order to get those numbers, they have to count every single person who's already working on an already permitted strip mining site? Yeah. Every strip mining job has a multiplier of about 2 to 4 jobs. But the liars who are behind this legislation, they use a multiplier of 11. They just take a number and multiply it by 11. Me, I like to multiply things by 19. I don't know why. I just, you know, that's one of the numbers I play in the lottery. 19. I like 19. It's one of them prime numbers. I like prime. So you begin to get the idea of the conundrum. It goes on and on and on. But the fact of the matter is, the reason the EPA is making any movement at all is because of the pressure that people like Bo Webb and Judy Bonds and Vernon Halton and many, many others have brought to bear on the EPA. Because, you see, we live here. And we're American citizens, too. And by God, we have rights just like American citizens. Never mind the fact that Don Blankenship, Nick Joe Ray Hall, and the rest of the crowd would just assume that we died and didn't exercise those rights. But we do. And the EPA is only acting because of the monumental pressure that we continue to bring, and that great, great groups like the National Resources Defense Council and the Sierra Club and the Rainforest Action Network continue to bring to bear. Grassroots coupled with big greens, all of whom understand that this human rights, this civil rights issue in Appalachia, is the sine qua non to the rest of the environmental movement, whether the rest of the environmental movement wants to admit it or not. And so we who have brought that pressure to bear are, according to my congressman and another freak Democrat from Kentucky, we're threats to national security. Can you imagine? You know, you've heard my darling son and my lovely daughters on the air here from time to time behind the microphone. Some of you have spoken to Agnes here and there. You listen to this show every night or every once in a while or whenever you get it. Did it ever enter into your mind that we're threats to national security? Because it blows my mind and it brings me damn nigh tears. You can call me a lot of things, but threat to national security is just another piece of dog whistle garbage doublespeak for un-American. And by God, Nick Joe Rahal, I won't stand for it. I'll not have you call me un-American. I'll not have you call me a threat to national security. Me, a registered Democrat from the moment that I was able to register to vote at the age of 18. Soon to be 30 years, a registered Democrat. Never voted, not once, not no, not how, no, never voted once for a repeg licking. Not once. And Nick Joe Rahal, you dare call me a threat to national security? You dare call me un-American? And yet you want me to vote for you? Short man speak with forked tongue. But like I said, this legislation isn't going to go anywhere. This is just dog whistling. And if there's any good to be taken out of it, it lies in the fact that this is their confession. This is their admission of defeat. That's how I choose to look at it, beyond the fact that I'm being called by my congressman un-American and a threat to national security. This is them admitting they're licked. Because as David in Tennessee noted, isn't trotting out threat to national security the last gasp argument of those that should have been vanquished years and years ago? You know, those of bad intent and no interest in caring for citizen or resource? Yes. The short answer is yes. But what a conundrum. Because Nick Rahal's seat is important. Every Democratic seat is important. And I'm not sitting here this isn't coming to some answer. You know, I've been, you know, wishing somehow that these, because it's not just me. Upwards as much as 70% of the citizens of this state, the majority of whom are registered Democrats, oppose mountaintop removal, oppose the wholesale destruction of our world. And he's actively militating against us in favor of an industry that produces less than 10% of the gross state product of West Virginia? I know, this isn't a West Virginia show, it's a global show. But you know what? I watched a talk on TED.com one day. It was a fellow from India who told a fascinating story. Of course, they have a way of being that on TED. And he talked about two Hindu gods. We'll call them A and B. Actually, one of them was my favorite Hindu god, Ganesh. And the other was, I don't know, Rama or Shiva or Liberace. I don't know. And they set out to, they challenged each other, being brothers, to a race around the world to see who would win. You know, gods do that kind of thing. They're bored gods. And so the beautiful athletic god brother took off a flying and he went 1, 2, 3 times around the entire globe. And little elephant-headed Ganesh trundled 1, 2, 3 times around his parents. And he turned and looked at his dashing brother and said, "I win." And his dashing young brother, who had just been 3 times around the globe, looked at him and said, "No, I win. How could you possibly have won?" And Ganesh looked at him and said, "You went around the world. I went around my world. This is my world. This is my world. I live in a fixed orbit around 2 teenage girls, 1 teenage boy, 1 40-something beautiful wife, and 3 exquisite grandchildren. That is my world. And it is my world that Nick Joe Rahal has said he is okay with destroying." Kind of reminds me of the quote from J. Robert Oppenheimer when the bomb went off. He quoted the Bhagavad Gita or whatever. "Lo, I am become death, the destroyer of worlds." Hey, it's Hindu philosophy night on the horn. That quote could just as easily be applied to Hal Rogers and Nick Rahal in their sad, slavish, embarrassing devotion to the coal industry and their opposition to ordinary working-class workaday West Virginians. "Lo, I am become death, the destroyer of worlds." And the world he seeks to destroy is not the world, although that's one of the long-term things, but my world. My world. And it is a horror. And it puts me in a hell of a fix. Do I vote for the Republican? I will have to, if I do that, I'll have to go to the polls having not eaten for about a week. Because I'll start vomiting the minute my pen gets near Spike Maynard's name. Or do I just leave it blank? Because I can't walk into a ballot booth and vote against my world, vote against those heavenly bodies about whom I orbit. I can't do it. I can't do it. No amount of political expediency can make me. I can't do it. And from the Dinos and the centrists and the go-along get-alongs, I won't accept one iota of blame if Nick Rahal loses. Because I only get to do something about Nick Rahal every 2 years. But he has spent the last 10 working tirelessly against me and against mine. Against my friends and my neighbors, against my state, and against you. I don't live a life in fear. Shakespeare was right. A hero dies but once, a coward dies 1,000 deaths. And so I will not be cowed, and I will not be a coward, and I will not live my life wondering if some 6-foot-7-inch Arab with a portable dialysis machine is going to play Pop Goes the Weasel and stick his head out of a cave in Afghanistan and say boo and reduce my local Wally World to a pile of smoke and rubble. I won't live my life that way. I'm also not afraid of lightning bolts, tornadoes, and the like. But I'm afraid of Republicans. I'm sick afraid of Republicans. And I'd give anything to be able to work against them. And to the extent that I can, I will. But that work cannot include a man who works against me. Now, I'm not sure if there's a Mountain Party candidate or not. If there is, I'll probably vote for him. Same thing I'm going to do with the Senate race. And it makes my head hurt to think about it. And the thing is, there's more on the other side of all of this, too. I was over at Alternate. I go there a lot. I was over at Alternate, and I saw a story from Earth Island Journal by Jason Mark. And the headline says, "Is there a rift between progressives and environmentalists?" The subhead says, "Why aren't more environmental organizations participating in the upcoming One Nation March?" Dateline is today, and Jason Mark writes, "I have to admit I was a bit embarrassed that I hadn't heard about the October 2nd One Nation March in Washington, D.C. until just a week ago." And he only heard about it from Phaedra Ellis Lamkin, the leader of Green for All, who took over from Van Jones. It's going to be a big to-do, this thing, on October the 2nd. A coalition of labor, civil rights, and peace organizations, one-day rally on the Mall in Washington to demand jobs, justice, and education. Demand an economy that works for all, a nation in which each person who wants to work can find a job that pays enough to support a family. All reasonable demands. Jason Mark says the organizing muscle is mostly coming from the labor movement, spearheaded, it seems, by SEIU and the United Auto Workers and the NAACP. They expect tens of thousands of people to show up. I wonder if anyone from those organizations will be present at Appalachia Rising. Because one of the things that Jason Mark says, One Nation boasts that the march will feature human and civil rights leaders, labor leaders, environmental and peace activists, faith leaders, celebrities, and sports figures. And Jason Mark writes, "Environmentalists? Really? I just checked out the One Nation list of partners and I saw only three groups there that were green. Green for All, 350.org, and Friends of the Earth. That's simply disheartening," Jason Mark says. "And it raises some troubling questions about the continued failure to make environmental sustainability a core part of progressive politics." I agree with that part. He then says part of the responsibility for this failure lies with the green groups themselves. Why haven't they signed on as endorsers of the march? At the very least, he says, I would think the big green groups could add their names to the call to action and in doing so acknowledge that economic justice is a concern of theirs. At which point, I spit dinner. I mean, does anyone really think that the average NRDC or Sierra Club member, to say nothing of your typical Greenpeace or Rainforest Action Network supporter, would object to creating a million new jobs right away? Yada, 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 yada. At which point, I got pretty disgusted with this article, I gotta tell you. Because it's another one of those moments. It's another one of those, oh look, a squirrel moments. Indicative of the manifest and nearly terminal case of attention deficit disorder that our side suffers. If you've listened to this program for any period of time at all, you know that I have time after time after time after time after time after time said that the only way that we will ever make any kind of progress toward our shared liberal progressive goals is when the environmentalists learn that their issues are labor issues, and when the labor people learn that labor issues are women's issues, and when the women's rights people learn that women's issues are gay rights issues, and when the gay rights issues people learn that their issues are children's issues, and when the children's issues people learn that their issues are environmental issues, and we realize it's a great big daggum loop. But Jason Mark is surprised and saddened to know that Sierra Club, NRDC, and Rainforest Action Network haven't signed on with this big to-do on October the 2nd. You know me, I can't let ignorance just lay there being unaddressed ignorance. God help me, I suppose I'm a tilter at windmills. But I had to clue Jason in. Perhaps they will endorse those organizations he mentioned. But I told Jason, if he reads the comment, I don't know if he will. Since you hadn't heard about that rally, may I guess you also haven't heard about Appalachia Rising? That's coming up in D.C. this weekend, culminating in a mass march rally on Monday at Lafayette Park. This is the real deal, Jason. Grassroots, the real ones. People from all over America demanding justice for people daily subjected to the horrors of strip mining that poison the water for millions of Americans. NRDC, the Sierra Club, and the Rainforest Action Network are all on board with Appalachia Rising, so one can't say that all the big greens are disengaged. They get it. Until Appalachian people are finally treated as American citizens fully vested with civil rights, the rest of the Enviro movement won't go much of anywhere. It's really the key, isn't it? As long as environmentalism remains detached from its essential human rights mission, it will continue to be found lacking in energy and commitment, in excitement, and in ultimate purpose. Fortunately for us all, the NRDC, the National Natural Resources Defense Council, the Sierra Club, and the Rainforest Action Network know exactly where they need to be. And they're going to be at Appalachia Rising this weekend into Monday. Because as I've said before, just as everything good in this nation started in Appalachia, so too this movement begins there as well. How glorious it would be to have our ranks swelled by the SEIU, by the UAW, by Green for All and 350.org and Friends of the Earth, by the NAACP. Remember Carter Woodson, the very father of Black History Month, the very father of the idea that there is a black history? Carter Woodson came out of coal mines right here in the county from whence I broadcast, Fayette County, West Virginia. He came out of here with his idea and his message growing and gestating in his heart and in his mind. Carter Woodson. I'd love to have the UAW at Appalachia Rising because the Ruther brothers. There would be no United Auto Workers if it weren't for the Ruther brothers who came out of Appalachia and brought decent livings to millions of American workers on assembly lines in auto plants all over this country via their organizing for the UAW. How I would love to see them at Appalachia Rising. But what we have here is the difference between being professionally liberal, professionally progressive, and the real, live, honest-to-Jesus grassroots. Like I said, you've heard from the guy who was a centerpiece in organizing Appalachia Rising. You'll hear from more of them on Monday. And nobody there is getting a big salary from anybody from a labor organization, a rights organization, nothing. This is something that is being done from the heart, and grassroots movements must begin to grow in the heart. Otherwise, they're shindigs. Not trying to sound bitter. Not trying to sound mean. What I do hope I sound like is a realist and a man consumed with passion. For his country, his family, and his progeny's future. I can't wait for Monday. I can't wait for Monday. It's 20 minutes before the hour. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. We'll take a little break and come back to your phone calls. This is The Horn.
Today you blasted near my street, and my house cracked at my feet. I can't help it if my home is in your way. Politicians by your side, they look so satisfied. I can't help it if my home is in your way. Promises you made amount to stealing. As a giant rock lands on my Chevrolet, suddenly I got that lawsuit feeling. I can't help it if my home is in your way. Hard to know that the sheriff's lips will kiss you. Now, where they kiss you, I can't say. We're asking for a big injunction issue. We can't help it if our homes are in your way. No, we can't help it if our homes are in your way.
17 minutes before the hour, and that from the monumental album featuring a number of wonderful artists called Moving Mountains. That's something. I can't help it if my home is in your way. Can't help it if my children are in your way, Congressman Rahel. I just can't help it. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, can you hear me?
I hear you fine.
This is Megan.
Hey, Megan, how are you?
Well, it took me close to 10 days to get over the shock of the primaries. How are you doing?
You know, I'm just trying to keep it together and keep from vibrating, you know, just vibrating, flying it all apart before November the 2nd.
Oh, God, you and me both. My state's been putting under the microscope lately with our new Republican candidate, and I'm not sure how I feel about it.
Well, the question, Megan, is, and you know, we'll find out November 2nd, how many lunatics are there in Delaware?
I haven't gotten the lay of the land quite yet. Apparently, there were enough to get her into the primaries But from what I hear locally, there's some grumbling because Castle didn't make it. And I heard today he's considering a write-in campaign. So the best I can figure is that maybe not enough Republicans made it to the primaries because they were reporting a low voter turnout. So I'm thinking now that the middle-of-the-road Republicans are just now waking up.
You probably see your newspapers and your local TV and stuff around there. How are they responding to the, she's a witch, she's a witch?
Oh, God. Honestly, I don't know. I'm just cringing every time I see a new comment, either on, you know, the news or the website or the TV, and I'm just shaking my head at this point. It's just, I'm going to sound a little naive here, but every time I think content is going to rule the day in these things, I always get disappointed.
Well, look, I don't know who it was that said you can never go broke underestimating the American people, but, you know, he wasn't kidding.
Oh, man. I think today Castle said he was going to do what Lisa Murkowski is going to do in Alaska. At least he said he hasn't ruled it out, which I guess in politician speak means that he's definitely going to go ahead.
Why not? What's to lose?
I'm having a hard time even figuring out what's going to happen in November, because they're reporting that the, everyone's against both parties at this point, and I'm like, well, one's really worse than the other, and if O'Donnell's platform consists of no more co-ed college dorms and against masturbation and women in the military, I'm like, I'm really hoping that's not enough of a majority to send her to the Senate. I'm just, at this point, it's really anyone's guess.
And you're a little scared.
Yeah. That's putting it a bit mildly. The good news is that I, like, right directly after I volunteered to help on the campaigns of Carney and Coons, and it looked like Coons was, immediately pulled ahead the minute she was announced as she won the primaries. So at this point, I don't know if just the Republicans, if it's just going to end up that they're just going to end up fighting amongst themselves. And that could help the Democrats this year, but sometimes you get a sense of these things and other times you don't, and I really don't know what's going to happen this November.
Well, I think it's a net good if Castle runs a write-in campaign. As long as his write-in campaign is sufficient to split not the Democratic vote, but the Republican vote.
Right. That's what I'm thinking might happen, but I guess we'll have to wait a little bit closer to November to see. There's been only really one debate, and that was between Carney and Newcourt, and it was like up in Wilmington. That's like two hours north of me. I couldn't make it to go see. I don't know if they're going to come south or not. I'm probably anticipating more appearances and stuff like that. I'm hoping for maybe local televised debates on local stations here or publicly funded stations here, just to see what's going on. But, wow.
I wouldn't count on a bunch of those debates if I were you.
No, I'm such the optimist. Keep hoping and, it doesn't always happen, clearly, but... it's been an uncomfortable, 9 days?
Seems like forever.
Oh, God. And then I'm a registered Democrat up in my state, and when I went to go, we actually had the, we voted in primaries, too, but it was for, the register wills and stuff like that. And when I went in to vote in my county, there was like a big, it was like a big inside joke that they waited all day for me. And I'm like, good Lord, am I really the only registered Democrat in this county?
Not encouraging.
Yeah. So I was just like, okay, wow. I'm thinking there were enough of the far right to get her into the primaries. I'm hoping this time maybe more people wake up at, you know, around November.
It's all we can do.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, at this point, all I can do is, there's some notices going out for the Democrats up here to do the canvassing and stuff like that. So hopefully, you know, I'll be busy with volunteering. But, I wanted to wish you, have a good time this weekend at the rally.
It's all going to be work.
Huh?
It's all going to be work. I mean, it'll be an exciting time, but.
Right. I heard about the rally the following weekend. Unfortunately, my cousin's getting married on Saturday, and next weekend I'll be out of town too. But I would try and keep tabs on both of them to see what was.
Well, you know, if you're not tied up Monday, come on over.
Oh, okay.
Monday's the big rally.
Oh, it's on Monday.
Yeah, Monday. Okay. Monday, it starts 10 a.m. Monday at the Freedom Plaza in D.C., not far from the EPA headquarters.
Gotcha. Yeah, I think Monday I'll be working all day, but was it Saturday I was going to be in town? Was it Saturday I'm going across to my cousin's wedding? Yeah, for some reason I thought it was on Saturday. Monday, you know, I could probably keep tabs on it. Is there going to be reporting on the web somewhere? Is it going to be on the Horn website?
Well, I'll be streaming it live. Yes.
Oh, okay.
To the extent possible and practical, because this all has to happen with cell phone internet bandwidth, and that can be a little dodgy.
Gotcha. Yeah. So it's going to be what, play by ear?
I hope not. I mean, I hope things are in place to make it pretty well reliable, but we'll have to wait and see.
Gotcha. I hope that all goes well for you.
Well, thank you very kindly. I do appreciate it.
And I've also been trying to keep tabs on the voting for the monolith.
Oh gosh, I appreciate that. We're making progress. Let's see, we've made it to number 57. Another 100 votes or so gets us into the 40s.
Oh, okay, that's cool. When does the voting shut down? Is it from now until when?
September 30th.
Gotcha. Okay, so we've got a little over a week.
Yeah, thereabouts. Right at a week.
Okay.
5 p.m. All Eastern. Right. 5 p.m. Eastern time on September 30th is when it closes.
Gotcha. I have some topics to want to discuss with you, Bob, but for some reason I just keep forgetting them.
No worries. We're going to be here for a while, so when they come back to you some other evening, just give us a ring. You know, it's conversation radio, so don't sweat it.
Oh, okay.
All right.
I'm going to hop on the chat room here shortly because I just got in the door from work and called it on my cell phone, so.
Okie doke. Well, I tell you what, then. I'll roll along, and we'll see you in the chat room.
All right. I'll see you then.
Okay. Bye now.
Bye.
Megan calling from Delaware, and we continue apace, I hope. Hey, welcome to the program.
Brother Bob.
Hey, what's happening, Cossack?
Not much. How's it going?
Pretty good, I guess.
The Monday, is that the Monday after the big to do on Saturday?
Well, no, I mean the rally. There's like meetings and teachings and conferences and entertainments Saturday and Sunday. You know, this Saturday and Sunday, and then Monday is the rally in March.
Okay, this upcoming Monday.
Monday as in the next Monday that comes on the calendar, the 27th.
Right. The upcoming one. Okay. Had I only thought about it, I might have fudged the time a bit, but yeah. Be there. I'll be there the week after.
Right.
But, oh, God. Where to begin?
Anywhere you like.
Did I mention somewhere along the line that I was one of the lucky founding members of DC Normal?
No.
Way back many years ago.
No, you didn't.
Oh, yeah. It was in the wake of the 20th annual Normal Conference in D.C. Quite the to-do. It's where I met Hunter Thompson, by the way.
Oh, wow.
Interesting man. Very nice, though. You'd be, you know.
Oh, without a doubt. You know, a lot of the writing, it was brilliant, but it was also part of a persona.
Yeah. In person, it was just very nice guy. Mourn his passing.
Every day, just about. Him, Bill Hicks. Yeah.
And Carlin, even though he died of natural causes, still.
Right, sure.
I mean, God. It's amazing that most of our sharpest and most incisive political and social commentary is done by the jesters. But then it's always...
But it's the same thing with Jon Stewart. You have to hide it behind... You know, I grew up with a guy, and when he was a little boy, he told me when he was a little boy, he would not eat his vegetables. And the only way his mother could get him to eat his vegetables was to, excuse me, sorry, the only way his mother could get him to eat his vegetables was to hide the broccoli behind a little dollop of chocolate pudding on the front of the spoon. Well, that's the only way we can have honest discourse about politics in this country anymore, Cossack, because the American people are not capable of taking it straight, no chaser.
No.
In the case of the authoritarian right wing, they've got to have a flag and a Bible, a flag wrapped around it with a Bible on top. And on the liberal side of things, we've got to be able to chuckle a little bit, or we'll just wind up sitting down wherever it is we're standing and bawling.
Yeah. I mean, God. I think that's the basic problem behind a lot of the climate denier faction is not that they're really, I mean, some of them are, but most of them aren't really that stupid. They know what's going on. The problem of it is they cannot admit to themselves what is going on, because to admit it would mean you would have to change your behavior.
Yeah, and we're also largely wrapped up in our own stuff.
Yeah.
I like to think that Appalachia Rising is a step away from that, because Appalachia Rising recognizes that what's being done to us here in Appalachia is having a profound negative effect on people who don't even know where Appalachia is.
Exactly.
Because right. It has effects on issues near and dear to people in the women's movement. It has a negative effect on people whose issues near and dear to them are in labor, in race-related issues, in gender equity-related. It touches everything.
Exactly.
And we also recognize that everything touches it.
That's the reason I brought up the topic of DC Normal, is back then we were trying to forge alliances with, you know, if you, you know, once you get into hemp in general, you really get kind of messianic about it, just because there is so much good to be gotten from hemp economically, environmentally, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, just down the road. You know, you know what I'm talking about.
Sure.
And when we were trying back then to forge links between ourselves and environmental groups and, you know, the vegetarian movement, the vegan movement, nobody wanted to come near us. We were lepers. And we were saying, but don't you understand? We're all going in the same direction. You know, you may think I'm a leper, but guess what? You're in the same boxcar I'm in.
Exactly.
Three guesses of what happens when we reach the destination and the door flies open.
Not hard to sort out, is it?
Yeah, this is what people don't understand. Either we hang together or we will hang separately. Franklin was a very wise old man. If we would bother to listen to him and look at the example of his life, we'd be all much better off. I mean, wasn't that the whole point behind supposedly the revolution and the War of 1812? We were casting off empire.
Yeah, we were in a word, anti-colonialist.
Correct. By definition. Well, we got a little bit squeamish about Haiti. You know how that is. Having all them black people rising up and winning against...
Yeah, well, we also never could have had the Louisiana Purchase without the Haitian Revolution.
That's true.
Because it made Napoleon a little too busy to be able to hang on to all of the land in the North American continent.
Exactly. But, and we definitely got the better of the bargain, but the Indians weren't real thrilled with it either. And if you look at it, there's a good reason why. There were differences the way Native Americans were treated by the different European groups. Most of the Western Europeans weren't real nice when it came to Native Americans. They really weren't.
No, the only ones who even came remotely close were the French, and that's only because they saw North America as a mercantile opportunity, not a colonization opportunity.
Right. And oddly enough, on the other hand, on the other side of the continent, the Russians, which is odd as all get out, but...
Yeah, they just really didn't have time to spend much time.
Right, but I mean... Yeah, you know, the Russians were accepted as not as conquerors because they didn't conquer anything. Mainly they were there for trade and raw materials and just to people who wanted to cross the sea to see what they would see. You know, but oddly enough, the way that the Russians intermingled with the Indians, you'll find that there's a high incidence of Russian Orthodox Eskimos and Russian Orthodox Northwest Indian tribes.
It's all a matter of who gets there first.
Well, no, but I mean, you know, the thing is, the Orthodox have never been into this convert or die crap.
Well, Orthodoxy has, but not necessarily the Russian variety. God knows the Greek Orthodox Church did plenty of convert or die.
Yeah, but that was still when they were part of the church. if you will. Yeah.
Well, the Byzantine Empire did some, sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But again, that was part of when they were part of the Roman Empire.
Exactly.
The Western Empire.
No, the Eastern Empire.
Eastern Empire, I'm sorry. After the fall of Rome, oh, God. But, you know, that's the horrendous thing, that these supposedly intelligent Christian mobs torched the Library of Alexandria, and we've never really recovered from that.
No, you can't have 3,000 years of accumulated wisdom put to the torch, and no.
It would be as though somebody had hit the Library of Congress with a nuke.
And the Library of Congress was where all the books were.
Right.
The only copies.
True. There's enough at the Library of Congress to make it pretty bad in that regard. But, in addition to that, Hypatia, who was...
Have you seen the movie yet?
No, I haven't.
It's beautifully made, and it covers exactly what you're talking about. The Agora, Alejandro Amenábar.
Right.
Agnes watched it and just screamed.
Well, Hypatia, in addition to being a thoroughly brilliant woman, was also considered to be one of the greatest beauties of her time. And, you don't want to keep somebody like that alive. You want to skin them alive. That's such a nice Christian thing to do.
Yeah, somehow or another, they just hadn't gotten around to putting on those WWJD bracelets.
I mean, how many times, somebody said to me, well, I read the Quran, and if you read the Quran, you realize what a violent religion it is. And I said, have you ever read the Bible? You want to talk about violent?
I know.
I mean, geez, people, come on, you know?
Exactly. Hey, Koss, I'm going to run. We're at the top of the hour and got to get the green news in, and then we'll see what else other people have to say. Thanks a million, and we'll talk to you soon, okay?
Yep, take care.
All right, bye now.
Bye-bye.
The Cossack calling from North Florida. About 7 minutes past, and we will. We'll take a little break. It's Thursday. That means the Green News Report is on its way with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. I always look forward to it. I know you do as well. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. Head on RadioNetwork.com.
Without frontiers, war without tears, games without frontiers. all without tears. Chiang Ching's is blue. They all have hills to fly them on, except for Lin Tai Yu. Dressing up in costumes, playing silly games, hiding out in treetops, shouting out rude names. If looks could kill, they probably will. In games without frontiers, war without tears. Games without frontiers, war without tears.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, September 23, 2010.
Look out, 1998 and 2005. 2010's shaping up to be the hottest year ever. Coral reefs totally stressed. Wouldn't you be? Plus, the safety of Gulf seafood, the labeling of Frankenfish, and which came first, the chicken?
I respectfully decline to answer the question based on the protection afforded me under the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution.
Or the tainted eggs.
All of that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
33 miners in Chile have been trapped underground, and we've all been praying for their safe return for over 6 weeks now. To put that in perspective, that's almost as long as we cared about the Gulf oil spill.
True dat, Stephen. This is your Green News Report. The Green News Report relies on you to stay independent. Please stop by our website at greennews.bradblog.com and donate to our work so that we can stay on the airwaves offering you not boring green news. That's greennews.bradblog.com. Okay, Des, autumn is now underway. What do you have for us today?
Well, another round of international climate negotiations are slated for Cancun, Mexico in December, but this week the UN climate envoy Todd Stern said climate talks have been, quote, going backward, and no one is expecting or anticipating in any way a legal treaty to be done at Cancun this year. As the negotiations stall, the world grows warmer. NASA reports that the first 8 months of this year, January through August, were the warmest globally in 130 years of record keeping, shaping up to surpass both 1998 and 2005.
Fossil fuel industry propaganda.
Global temperatures are stressing coral reefs around the world. Marine scientists say this year they are seeing signs of mass coral reef bleaching and deaths of coral reefs. Only the second time in recorded history this has been observed, reports the New York Times. Coral reefs under heat stress go into survival mode, which causes them to lose their color or bleach, and they can eventually die. The last time mass coral bleaching was observed was 1998, one of the hottest years in history, when an estimated 16% of the world's coral reefs died. Scientists have predicted for years that coral reefs would be an early warning system for climate change.
Have I mentioned fossil fuel industry for the win?
In an exclusive report, RawStory.com says that despite federal assurances that Gulf seafood is safe to eat, independent scientists and public health experts are expressing serious concerns about the long-term effects of consumption of contaminated seafood from the Gulf due to the presence of heavy metals and cancer-causing chemicals found in crude oil that some evidence indicates can accumulate in the food chain over time. Officials with the FDA and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration say that all fish and shellfish in reopened federal and state waters have tested well beneath the level of concern for these substances, but these scientists say there is no data on long-term effects, and they call for monitoring of Gulf seafood for at least 3 to 5 more years. Earlier this week, we reported that the Food and Drug Administration's holding panel hearings to determine whether to approve genetically engineered salmon for consumption, the first genetically engineered animal to be considered. The independent panel says that while genetically engineered salmon is almost certainly safe to eat, they do recommend...
Almost certainly...
They do recommend that the government pursue a more rigorous analysis of the possible health effects and environmental impact. The recommendation, however, is not binding on the FDA, and the FDA also now appears likely to not require labeling of transgenic salmon for consumers.
And I know there was also talk from the salmon industry about being able to label non-Frankenfish as natural.
It appears that FDA regulations would not allow that because that would imply that the natural salmon is somehow better or more healthy, and FDA labels aren't allowed to do that.
Then genetically modified food industry for the win.
A House congressional committee held a hearing on Wednesday investigating the recall of a half a billion eggs in August due to salmonella contamination that sickened over 1,600 people. In wide-ranging testimony that included two victims of the tainted eggs, the owner of the largest farm at the center of the recall, Wright County Egg, apologized.
We apologize to everyone who may have been sickened by eating our eggs.
The owner of the second facility involved in the recall, Hillendale Farms, invoked his Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination. After 10 years of trying, new rules for egg safety finally came into effect in July 2010, but that was after the tainted eggs were shipped. When asked why the new rules took so long to get approval, FDA Deputy Commissioner Dr. Joshua Sharfstein, who's been on the job for only a year, testified that career employees said the Bush administration declined.
The prevailing attitude at the time in the administration was that regulation was an evil that should be avoided unless there was a compelling argument for government action.
How's this for compelling? People are getting sick. Good Lord. Bush administration for the win. To read about that and much more, check out our website, greennews.bradblog.com. Download us for free on iTunes. Listen to us on your mobile device via Stitcher. Follow us on Twitter at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report for the win.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right.
We do?
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
The hour, and we continue on. God, so much to talk about tonight. Did you notice, by the way, that I guess we're still busy looking forward and not back, but there are newly declassified documents thanks to a Freedom of Information Act request by the National Security Archive. Newly declassified documents that shows that the Bush administration was planning to attack Iraq all the way back to November 2001. No, really. Show of hands, can we stop looking forward and not back and maybe consider some indictments, maybe a war crimes tribunal, something like that? My God. There's a talking points memo that goes back to that date, and it's just breathtaking, just sickening. When you think of the blood and the treasure gone for this sick adventure. Here's the memo. How start? The how start meaning how start war with Iraq. How start? Bullet. Saddam moves against Kurds in north. Bullet. U.S. discovers Saddam connection to September 11 attack or to anthrax attacks? Bullet. Dispute over WMD inspections? Sub-bullet. Start now thinking about inspection demands. In December 2001, they issued a memo in which the Bush State Department's Bureau of Intelligence and Research did an assessment of international support for the war against Iraq. December 2001. Remember, they said, we haven't made up our minds right till the very minute that we've made up our minds. In December 2001, the State Department noted, UK's Blair would publicly support a U.S. decision to bomb Iraq, but would face considerable criticism. How start? Memo to Obama administration. Start with grand jury. Because how start has multiple meanings, doesn't it? Sure it does. Jeebus. So let us go forthwith to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Juanita.
How you doing?
I'm all right. How about you?
All right. You're the threat to our security?
All of us who oppose mountaintop removal and the wholesale destruction of our homes. Yep.
Well, we're in pretty good shape then if it's just y'all. Oh, my gosh. What a thing to say.
Isn't it nice to have representation? I wouldn't know because I don't. No, well, it's in the bill, these findings about how EPA is a threat to national security. Well, EPA can't be a threat to national security unless I am, because we're the ones that have been begging EPA to do something.
Yeah. Well, I hope hope it works out, Bob. I don't know. But I saw a poll the other day saying that your governor was behind.
There's one that says he's ahead, and there's one that says he's behind.
Well, we know he's behind, no matter what.
Well, he, yeah, exactly.
He's a behind, right?
Right. A horse is behind.
Yeah.
The southbound end of a northbound horse.
I just wanted to say something about, I do have a little something I want to talk about, but about Alan Grayson.
Mm-hmm.
They're shooting all the big guns against that guy. But you know how he is. I got an email from him today, and he's saying it looks like they're going to try to get Caligula's pony in there.
Yeah. And lo and behold, what have I been said? I've been making that reference for months now. I'm so proud of myself.
Well, maybe confident from you.
Oh, I would not be so lucky as to have somebody like Alan Grayson listening to this program.
He's amazing. But he's their number one target. You know, he won the most popular congressman.
Yeah, the right wing hates him.
Yeah.
Because, see, he does that Harry Truman thing. He doesn't give them hell. He tells them the truth, and they think it's hell.
Right, right. But I wanted to talk a little bit about Jimmy Carter.
Please.
You were talking about a lot about it last night, and it made me think a lot. Now, when he was president and all, I was into that right-wing religion stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I was also being unusually American.
Uniquely.
Uniquely by working three jobs, you know.
Right.
Three jobs. But, yeah, so I was, and at that time, I just kind of like blah, blah, you know. And now I hear all this stuff in church, you know, against him. And I actually thought maybe he wasn't that good a president. And, but looking back, I see what I missed. But I do remember one thing about him and Ted Kennedy. You know, he came out about and said Ted Kennedy fought him on a health plan he had. And, Ted Kennedy, I mean, they're human beings. You know, they're not always these Greek gods or something, or, well, no, Greek gods would do anything. But you know what I'm saying? They all have feet of clay. And at the time, when Carter was running again for the second time, and I vividly remember, because I always watch the conventions, and I vividly remember, them all being on stage, and including, you know, Ted Kennedy and Jimmy Carter. And Jimmy Carter was trying to reach out to him, and he would just turn away from him every time. And I remember the look that Jimmy Carter gave him, you know. Why are you doing it? You know, because he was trying to be president then. Also, Ted Kennedy was. So I remember that. And like I say, I adored Ted Kennedy. He was great, you know. But like I say, they all have feet of clay. And then also, at the time, you know, I remember when prices started really going up. I remember when Nixon was in, and like one year we had a certain price, and the next of things, different things, and then next year it was like at least double. And then, like, maybe 2 years later, it you know, would triple. So that's where a lot of the high prices were. And also, I've had people say, oh, you know, we had a gas shortage during Carter's administration. I said, well, I don't even remember that. Because what I remember is the gas shortage we had when Nixon was president, because I was working at a hospital then, you know, in the admitting, and they would let us off to go and stay in line to get gas.
Mm-hmm.
And at first, when it first started, I was, my car was, you know, they told me to use the what they call high test then, I think things are
right
now. And I was like, waiting in line, and I got it and then that was no more. And everybody behind me, they couldn't get any gas because the gas had run out. And I said, that's when I switched over to regular. I thought, I didn't want it to happen to me. But we would, and then they started doing it like every 2 days, you know, like every other day, you know, if you're tag or whatever it was, I forget now. But that's where it was really a mess. And you're, and the employees were really willing to let you go because some, if you waited till after you were off from work, you might not could find any gas.
I remember it well. I was a kid, but I do remember it well.
Yeah, there you go. And then another thing about, you know, people say, well, how high interest were back then? Yes, they were. And they were extremely high. You bought a house, it was extremely high. But the prices were a whole lot lower back then. If you could pay $5 or $10 extra on your home a month, the interest would go down. And, I mean, if you've got like, even if you've got like 5% interest, I mean, and you're having to pay exorbitant prices, my God, what they're paying, having to pay now, I've never even hardly made that much in a month. I worked, my last job was at a retirement home.
Well, see, I remember
the rent that those people were paying.
Toward the end of his life, my father always continued to enjoy going out and wandering around the car lot because he just loved cars.
Yeah.
And we'd all, he loved SUVs, you know, the big old gas guzzlers. But he'd look at him, he'd say, son, I don't have it in me to spend more on a car than I spend on my house.
Yeah, I know it. We used to think $10,000 was awful to spend on a car. Now you'd be lucky if you find one. I don't think they even have them anymore, except from India.
I know.
But before I forget, I want to tell you, ask you, have you heard about the Similac recall?
Oh, no. There's a new baby formula recall?
Yeah, it's they're hoping it's limited, but I can send you the article. I heard it on TV is where I heard it, and I thought, well, Bob, you know, he's got those grandbabies. And
two of them are completely off the formula, but the little guy is still on it. But
yeah.
Is it the milk-based stuff or is it the soy?
Let me see what it says here. But I'm gonna send you the article.
Do please.
Got the numbers of them, and what it is, it's some kind of insect, beetles that got into the formula.
Oh yuck!
Yeah.
And did they get into it in China?
Huh?
Did they get into it in China? Is that it?
They claim it's in Michigan. Said they were found in a section of their manufacturing plant in Sturgis, Michigan. But they're offering, if you have that product, you know, and it's these numbers, that they will pay the mail for you to mail it back to them, and, you know, they'll replace it, you know, if you trust them. Trust to get them, you know.
Right.
This is what they give a lot.
Yes.
Of
yeah. Please send us back the evidence that you would otherwise be using when you sue us.
Yeah. Right. But anyway, it's got several numbers, you know, on here, and.
Well, look, it's it's a typo. Somebody just screwed up in inside the company. They said, you know, we're fixing stuff for baby's bottle. And they heard, we're fixing stuff for baby's beetle.
Oh, yeah. Well, it says it can cause the babies to have stomach pain and digestive issues.
Well, I should think so.
Because, see, they're giving this out where they, first one, this lady, she just had a baby, and she had a bunch of hospital gave her, and they had to call her that there was a recall on them. So... Yeah, I'm glad that I told you because I thought, well, Bob probably already knows.
Well, no, I didn't, but, you know, there's other people out there that need to know as well,
right,
you know, parents
right.
and grandparents.
Right. So I'm going to send that to you, and I hope you have a wonderful time.
Well, thank you.
I know you will because it's people of like mind.
Yeah, and it's wonderful and energizing and everything to be around them.
It does help so much.
And it makes the work worthwhile too.
And you know, you can't talk to everybody like this in person.
No.
Because people have some strange ideas. And
well, like Bo Webb, I just wonder what'll happen if the coal mob shows up.
With what?
If the coal mob shows up.
Oh yeah.
You know, because they're a sort of violent lot.
Yeah, I've learned that. I've come to learn that. I've seen evidence of it in your YouTube and all that kind of stuff. And the guy, you know, comes to where they were having their 4th of July celebration and acting up.
Oh yeah, and the woman who punched Judy Bonds in the head.
Oh my gosh, when that
and you know her battling brain cancer now.
And you're and Agnes is got hit too.
Yeah, she got kidney punched.
Wow. I'm telling you.
They're a nice bunch, those friends of coal. They're good at being friends of coal, Juanita. They're just not very good at being friends of people.
Yeah, right. And they don't think about how it's affecting their own children with the drinking water and so forth. Well,
as long as they can put a new Chevy pickup truck in the driveway every 5 years and go buy some Chinese clothing from Walmart.
Yeah.
Who cares about the kids?
Even their self, I guess. Well, it's like it used to when first came out about...
Yeah, especially their kids.
That smoking could harm you. And it's, well, I have to die of something. Might as well die of lung cancer.
Right.
And, you know, that kind of attitude, I guess. But anyway. Well, I want to ask you one more question. Is our girl going to be there, Judd? Ashley Judd,
I don't know. I certainly hope she is. It would make it extra special if she is.
I hope so, too. Okay, well, you have a wonderful time, and when will you be back?
We're going to be hitting the road back here, hopefully fairly early Wednesday morning. I don't know if I'll be on the air Wednesday night or not.
Okay.
Those road days, those travel days are kind of rough.
Well, is Agnes going with you?
No, she's got to stay here. She's still getting over the surgery.
Well... I heard you say last night she wasn't taking care of herself.
No, she's not.
But
it makes me just want to, you know, eat dirt and bark at the moon. But no, she's not.
Well, if she collapses by the wayside, well, who's going to take care of her and the rest of you?
You know, that's logic. That's logic, Juanita, and that's reason. And after I go tell her that, I'm going to go tell it to the tree and see which one responds better.
Yeah, all right.
Well,
we can only hope.
I know. Take care, Juanita. Thank you.
You take care, too. Night-night.
Night now. That's Juanita calling from Central Florida, and we move onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Jim. What's up?
Not a whole lot. First, the baby food product in question is Similac.
Yeah, that Juanita said, yeah. I just didn't know if it was milk-based or soy-based.
Well, Similac, and I don't know too much about baby food, but over headline news this morning, they said that it really wouldn't cause any harm.
Yeah, what's a beetle among friends?
Well, I thought, you know, that's kind of strange. But, I mean, like I say, I've never bought baby food, and I've never had to deal with it, but I did hear that, and they said that it would be minimal, that type of thing, as far as damages to the infant are concerned. And second thing, going back to Nixon, didn't he initiate price controls, rent controls, and things of that nature?
Yes, sir. As a result of runaway inflation.
Yeah, he did kind of, put some type of brake on that.
But, my God, can you imagine what a teabagger would call him for that now?
Well, you know, basically what he was doing was following the OPA, the Office Price Administration, that was in effect under Roosevelt and Truman. I mean, the OPA was a very powerful federal agency at that time.
And he was also trying to keep the American economy from completely grinding to a halt, to the point that dollar bills were, you know, like Deutschmarks during the Weimar era.
Well, that's what I was thinking of next. you know, in spite of his flaws, and in spite of which were personal in nature and psychological in nature, Mr. Nixon did do some good things and tried to do some good things. And unfortunately, let's face it, he has some rather serious psychological problems that he had endured throughout his life, and, you know, it was very, 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 very unfortunate that those things were in attendance with his actions when he was in power.
Yeah, I agree. And it also goes to, because nobody in that era thought that there was anything particularly liberal about Richard Nixon. You know, rampant anti-communist red baiter, hated hippies, national security state stuff. There was nothing to recommend Richard Nixon as particularly liberal. But when you look back at things like price controls on a gallon of gasoline, then suddenly it's a different story. And you realize that, really, honest to God, not for any of his transgressions or misdeeds, Jim, Richard Nixon would not be welcome inside his own party in 2010.
No, not at all.
They would call him a communist.
You know, not all good things come from the left. In certain cases, in Nixon's situation, a lot of good things came from the right, from him.
Well, you know, on Monday we're going to be marching over to have a little conversation with the Environmental Protection Agency, created under the Nixon administration.
Well, he created that, and also I think, I'm not sure, you can correct me on this, I also think he created the NEA, the Arts Agency. But going to these federal agencies, and I said this before, I said it last night, and I'll say it again, these federal agencies are headed by political appointees, and the career people who have to take their marching orders from these political appointees are emasculated. I mean, they have to do what the boss at the top says. And if you have one who tries to step out of line, they're going to call him a whistleblower, and he will be subject, she will be subject to measures which are absolutely draconian. And what I'm trying to say is, and I defend the civil service, and I will defend it with my last breath. They are put in position to help the American people and to make our lives better. Unfortunately, the superiors who come in every 2 or 4 years, or however long they can stand being the head of a federal agency as a Schedule C appointee, follow the dictates of politics and not reason and rationale. I mean, these people that people refer to as bureaucrats, because I was a bureaucrat, and I know that these so-called heartless bureaucrats are human beings, and they know a sense of right from wrong, but are pilloried whenever they try to go against whatever political influence is coming down through the chain of command to them. You can't blame the civil service.
No, they're here, and I mean they're supposed to be the actual non-political civil servants are supposed to be outside the purview of politics. Now, one of the problems we have, Jim, is that that fairly simple concept was abrogated in the 8 tormented years of George W. Bush. You know, the civil service is where, and this was a concerted effort, it was a very deliberate act, the civil service in Washington is where Dick Cheney left so many of his moles, so many of his little sleeper cells.
Well, you know, that's right. The civil service back in the late 19th century had become so corrupt that the man who started civil service reform was Teddy Roosevelt.
I didn't realize that, but it's not surprising. Even as leading a light, you know, there's always an excuse for me to mention Mark Twain. He does a take on the civil service in a piece called The Facts in the Great Beef Contract. And apart from the fact that it will leave you clutching your sides and weeping with laughter, it's also a pretty dead-on examination of what it was like to try to get anything done through the American bureaucracy of the late 19th century. It's worth the effort just to look it up.
Well, you know, back in those days, the civil service was very corrupt, and it was basically jobs, patronage jobs, and things of that nature. And there were efforts to make civil service competitive and in search of the most qualified and the best people. And you, of course, had the establishment of the Civil Service Commission, which was followed by the Office of Personnel Management. But back in the 1980s, when Reagan came into office, the Office of Personnel Management, which would basically serve as a watchdog to ensure the best candidates would receive those jobs, began to be dismembered. And it continued and continued. And I'll say this, the last president I remember, and I was at a meeting, the last president who said anything good to say about civil service was Bush 1. Now, that I remember. And that was at a meeting in Washington among senior executive civil servants. I saw this.
That's interesting.
But then again,
he had sort of a bureaucratic background, so maybe he had a little more sympathy.
He himself was a civil servant. And he understood the bureaucracy and how it was supposed to work and supposed to ameliorate and not exacerbate the evils that are in government. I mean, this man did have some type of heart. He did. There were a lot of things that were bad.
More than anything else, he did some bad things. He did some evil things. But more than anything else, he was just clueless. You know, a guy who's been president for 4 years and doesn't know what a barcode scanner is. Yeah, remember that?
Yeah, I do remember that. I mean, of course, and he had, we can sit here all night and talk about the pros and cons and the goods and bads of people who have been in office. And, you know, I try to remember, and maybe I'm being very naive, the good things about most people. But as someone once said, the good that a man does is always in tune with him, whereas the bad continues to exist forever. And I guess that's just human nature. I think Shakespeare once said that. I don't know if it's Shakespeare or not. But it's really unfortunate that our government has become so political and so emasculated, and I'm talking about the career people, they can't do their jobs. And under Reagan and under Bill Clinton, with the reinvention of government, they tried to remove the shell that protected the civil service. So the blame is on both sides of the aisle for this. And I can speak with authority if that's because I lived through it. I saw it. And when I saw when Bill Clinton came into office with the reinventing government thing, the destruction of the Federal Personnel Manual, and the ability to attack career civil servants, it made me very, very unhappy. So this thing goes back a long way. It certainly does.
Without a doubt.
And, by the way, my regards to Cossack and the Russian Orthodox Church. And I will say this, and I'm going to get off here. Have you ever noticed the difference between the structures of the Russian Orthodox Church and the Roman Church in the West?
No, it's a wildly different structure.
Well, you know, the Catholics and the Protestants, they built these huge, beautiful cathedrals, almost like modern towers of Babel, reaching up to God. Whereas the Russian Orthodox Church, with its low spires and the pendentives onioned on the top, their philosophy was to invite God to come to them. And that's the reason that you can see cathedrals in Paris and the differences in the architecture that you see in St. Basil's in Red Square.
Never thought of it that way, but yeah.
That's exactly what the philosophy was, because Ivan the Terrible sent emissaries because he wanted Moscow to become the Third Rome. And he sent emissaries to the Catholic Church. He sent them to the Islamic Church. And he also sent them to the Byzantine Church in Constantinople. And the one thing he wanted was for the church to be subservient to the state. As bad as he was, and as terrible and awe-inspiring, and that's exactly what they meant by terrible, he realized the necessity of the church must be subservient to the state, at least to the point where it cannot dictate policy to the state. And that's the reason the Russian Orthodox Church was formed. And I can tell you from personal experience, if you should ever attend a Russian Orthodox church and see the ceremony and the types of procedures followed, the male choirs, things of that nature, they are intensely beautiful.
And that's the function of an ecclesiastical organization with a history.
Yeah,
it's a function of its evolution.
Exactly.
Because the same roots of the of orthodoxy committed horrors, especially in the earliest days of the institutionalization of Christianity. You know, look, think about all those bishops who went to the Council of Nicaea.
The Council of Nicaea, and also there was another one too.
And they had a philosophical or a theological debate. The only problem was the losers, the people who got who lost the vote, lost their heads.
Well, basically, we're talking about the Western Church. That's what we're talking about.
Well, I mean, this is taking place in what the 4th century AD.
The third century.
I mean, this is long before the schism.
And, of course, you had the Arian heresy and this type of thing about the Holy Trinity and all this stuff. And
angels on the head of a pin. And
I would guess that would be as good a way to put it.
And I know our dear friend Eugene Finnerman, and if you've never read Your RDA of Irony over at FinnermanWorks.com, Jim, you would find it. A glorious afternoon spent reading. Eugene is a scholar of Byzantine history with no peer, and he does it with tongue firmly implanted in his cheek. But you know, he's pointed out on a number of occasions, you know, that the ancient Greek church came to blows over prepositions. You know, whether it was of or for.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know.
And blood flowed.
Yeah, this is regrettable. But, you know, so many people always equate Russian with something bad.
And no, not me.
I don't either. Because when you look at their history and the things they endured and suffered, but when you look at the golden age of Russian literature, science, and art, and the silver age, they surpassed the world.
Well, and they did more with less than anybody else on the planet, too.
They did. I mean, Mendeleev, Pavlov, Vogel, Pushkin. And, of course, most of these people in our country don't even know who these men were. And yet, you mentioned Russian. You mentioned anything favorable about Russia or whatever. And people look at you like you are some type of anti-American and ought to be burned at the stake.
Well, Jim, I know that firsthand because I will never forget, again, this is one of those little stories out of my childhood, but I was a high school student in Alabama, and literally the woman who taught English to the cosmonauts for the Apollo-Soyuz mission, do you remember that? She was my Latin teacher, and I adored her, and you know, obviously she was also fluent and qualified to teach Russian, and we begged her because she had created a love of learning language in us that was it was immeasurable, and we begged her for a chance to learn Russian, even if it was just for 1 year, just to learn the Cyrillic alphabet, learn the parts of speech, learn a few words, learn to say hi, how are you. This is 1979, 1980.
Wow.
And as quickly, Jim, as we got a little bit of momentum behind us, the good Christians and upstanding patriotic Americans said, we don't want our children learning no filthy commie language.
Let me say this, and I've got to get off here because I know you have people who want to talk. When I was a boy, after school, I would hang out at the library a lot. And there was an elderly lady who was the grandmother of a classmate of mine in high school. And she was Princess Utonsky. And she wore a black dress, had this gold lorgnette, and this, that, and the other. And she would sit in the library a lot and just talk to people and things of that nature. And I got to know her. And one day, she brought in her scrapbook. And do you know what her position was at court?
What?
She was a lady-in-waiting to the Empress.
I'll be darned.
But I learned a great deal from her. And I can still see her. And she, of course, had to flee and had married a Baltic baron named Von Keller. And nonetheless, but this is just a part of my boyhood history. And I owe that old aristocrat who had seen her entire world collapse around her, but yet come over and do the best she could, I owe her a lot. Just as I've discussed people with you who were friends of my parents. So, I mean, you know, you really can't point fingers at too many people without being wrong yourself. I don't know if I'm making any sense.
You are. You do.
But that part of my life had a great deal to influence me as an adult and to make me more tolerant and understanding. And what I'm trying to say here, and the operative word is appreciative of their contributions. Something that's lost today.
And is made more difficult day by day. Jim, thank you very much.
And I thank you, and I wish you a good trip.
Thanks a lot. Take care.
Good night.
Bye now. I guess I should be wishing people a good weekend because I won't be here to wish them one tomorrow. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Hey, Sandra.
Hey, listen, so let's just start talking about Bishop Long.
I'm sorry, about
Bishop Long.
Bishop Eddy, absolutely, yeah.
Oh, dear God. Listen, I was like, yeah, let me go listen to some black radio, and yes, indeedy, full on. But the funniest thing about it, in Atlanta, you know, and I was waiting for it, when the gay brothers started calling in, they're like, hello, This has been rumored for years. Of course, right? I'm sorry. I'm so jaded on this shit. This is hilarious.
Well, how can you not be?
Well, no, but it's just funny because I knew when I was listening to Atlantic Radio that some queens would call in, and they surely did, talking about, we're sorry, Miss Whoever was doing a show, but this has been rumored for years. And I've been in Atlanta, you know, X number of years. They would say, one after another called, saying loud, I'm queer, I'm gay, blah, blah, blah. So this whole thing is just quite disturbing because now they're trying to, you know, sort of besmirch the...
Right. Attack the accuser.
Right. But the problem with that, though, it doesn't...
He stole the bishop's iPod.
No, but that's a mistake because these are already so-called young men at risk. So if you're going to pull that hat out, to me it makes them look even worse because you're taking advantage of a vulnerable kid. So it doesn't make any difference if they say that, oh, these aren't bad. These are bad kids because, well, I thought you were trying to guide them right anyway. You know what I mean? So...
That's just not working out.
Right, it's worse. It makes it worse.
And he's got how many members? 25,000?
Oh, yeah, it's a massive. And also the best part is that this dude is one of them, you know, oh, a marriage is only between one man and one woman, blah, 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 wants a national band.
And occasionally an 18-year-old boy in New Zealand.
Whatever, but it's just, the whole thing is just, of course he's denying it. He was going to go on air until, oops. A third one filed suit.
Drip. Oh, what was it they said during the Clinton era? Drip, drip, drip.
Yeah, and, you know, unfortunately for old Bishop, long.
You see, it's a tough story to, you know, you can just break out into crippling laughter at several places in this story.
Well, no, but Ted Haggard, unfortunately, has spoken out. It's like, why don't you shut up?
See, that's one of those moments where if I'm Bishop Long, I pick up the phone and I go, hey, quit helping.
No, please shut the hell up. I just was, you know, I was just rolling thinking, well, anyway, this is huge news down there. And the thing about Atlanta is it's kind of a running joke among black women. You don't date men down there because you don't even know what's going on.
Well, I mean, I seem to recall from my time living there, which albeit wasn't that long, but it was long enough to get to know the town, somebody said there that at that time, which was the late 80s, that Atlanta had the second largest gay population outside of San Francisco?
Well, yeah, not only that, but the problem is that it's all the sort of down-low business because the black community is so homophobic and weird, yet Atlanta, every other Negro is doing whatever. So, you know, if you're just a straight female, you don't know what's
you're
going
out of luck.
On. You don't know what's going on. And so it's just kind of... You know, it's just a running joke, so it's not much of a leap to even believe this about, you know, Mr. Long.
Well, he certainly does dress as a stylish bishop.
Oh, he straight up. Yeah, I know.
Does he have a jet like Creflo Dollar?
I don't know about all that. I don't know, but his church is $50 million it costs for that to be built. I mean, we're not talking about chump change. I saw pictures of him rolling with Bush and all these other freaks. You see what I mean?
Yeah, and the thing that blows me away is how did it come to pass that Coretta Scott King's funeral was held there?
Well, this is the thing, and it's like, well, yeah, exactly. But then again, didn't the homophobic one do a eulogy for her? One of the...
Well, I was going to say, you reckon Alveda had something to do with that?
Well, another king member of the King family is actually a minister there, too. So...
No, that may explain it.
Yeah, so their connection with the King family, I think, is...
Frankly, it sure would be nice if she could get tied, you know, if somebody would tie her a little closer to Bishop Eddie, especially after her... impassioned speech on behalf of God knows what, you know, down at White Stock a few weeks ago.
Yeah, no, but all you can do is shake your head. I mean, I'm not surprised, but the sort of, it was interesting because the phone calls ran from people saying, oh, you know, wow, and I'm shocked, to the sort of Jim Jones dead eyes, oh, no, not our minister support, to the queens who are like, oh, yeah, and how? Going on about every other man they know got tapped by some preacher or another. I mean, the conversation was like that. I was dying. You know, because I just think the whole thing is funny. Because
was the show in an effort to defend him, or was it sort of neutral?
Oh, no, she was well neutral. She was real respectful to everybody who called, just like a definite sounding board. I wish I could remember the host's name, but she was, no. She was like, I mean, once again, you have to keep in mind that the black radio is just sort of sick with We Love Jesus. That's beyond that, though. It was neutral. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
There's a general, God is great, and that's what you need in your life. But then there's neutral, too.
That's also endemic to the black church throughout America, isn't it, Sandra? I mean, what was the percentage of voters for yes on Proposition Hate in California that came out of the black evangelical church?
Well, yeah, but see, that actually is, that one was just really blown out of proportion, I'm sorry to say, from the sort of gay activists who can't never draw any connections when it comes to the big issues, but they're quite happy to blame black folks when they're not doing what they want them to do. Because the percentage of black people in California, wait for it, is 6%, Bob.
6%?
Yeah. So when people talk about the black vote, you know, they're losing their minds because the sheer numbers can't accommodate that sort of accusation. Now, keep in mind that the 6%, black people vote more than any other minority group. I'd say, you know what I mean, like 70% of that 6% is a voting group because black people have a long history of voting. So, but the population here is 6%. I need to always put that out there because I'm always amazed how people think black people are like, you know, 20%, 40%. It's like, hello?
Well, I stand corrected then. Of course, the homophobia inside the black evangelical church is very real and very verifiable, is it not?
No, that's all. It's off the hook, and they're forever coming down on the wrong side of the sort of gay rights movement. But what I'm saying is that it cuts both ways because the gay movement will never sort of reach out to a lot of community of colors. I have to say that, at least in California.
There's still a lot in the gay community that's lily white.
Right, and so you have that dynamic going on. So when they want to join hands for their causes, well, it's like, where were you when we're trying to do...
Well, and see, that ties into the larger theme that I was alluding to at the beginning of the program, Sandra, and that is this ongoing problem in liberal land of our varied and very much segmented interest groups to understand that we've all got some level of commonality of interest between every issue and every other.
Oh, no. But, no, it's just a reason why, I mean, it's funny you should mention that because that's such a sore point for me because I was so disappointed in how that played out here. I'm like, are you kidding me with this? You know, with that sort of accusation. And, you know, I knew a woman who was, you know, working right on the Prop 8 committee, you know, a black gay woman who was forever bitching at me about, you know, how stupid and ignorant and uninformed the black community is. And I would say to her, are you doing any sort of reaching out? And it's like, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, to who?
So, huh?
Yeah, but reaching out to who?
Right, and it's just like, I'm thinking, okay, you're a sister that's so buried up in this gay marriage thing, but you should be on the front line making that bridge between the groups, not bitching about how ignorant and uninformed the black community is. So that's just one example. And so there was a lot of issues in that Prop 8, and plenty of blame to go around, but I'm just letting you know that the percentage just does not answer that accusation.
Sure. This is, the ironic thing in all of this is that the black evangelical church also voted pretty solidly for Barack Obama, too, right?
Well, see, that was the whole thing. That's why it was so interesting, because you had an extra big turnout because of that dynamic going on. But the Prop 8, you know, they were upset because they didn't get the coattails of that, resurgence. So, you know, there's... Yeah, it definitely was sort of messy, And there's no doubt that the black community has issues with the whole sexuality thing, but I was quite surprised to hear how freely the information was being exchanged on this particular Atlantic radio station.
So you want to proffer any odds on how long it takes for this lawsuit to settle?
I don't really know, but it doesn't really, even he better try to figure something out, because the damage is being done on hourly with this, as far as I can tell.
And tomorrow, you know, tomorrow a fourth comes out, and, you know, how, and,
right.
You know, it's like, well, it's like Ted Haggard calling in. You know, that wasn't an act of Christian comradeship. That was a finger in the eye.
No, because it's sort of like, you know, obviously, whatever settlement they were working on didn't work out, or these people wouldn't have gone public. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's an ongoing process, and the point they're at now for him is far more damaging than what can happen to these youth. You know what I mean?
Well, without a doubt. And I mean, there's some serious money at stake here too.
Yeah. So anyway, we'll see how long the dead eye Jim Jones people hang on. But
well, let me offer, by way of a comparison with this story, and it goes way back in the history of this program and maybe pre you, but we had, and it was one of the most stirring conversations I ever had. We had a conversation on here in the early days of this program with a guy from Oklahoma City who came out of the apostolic evangelical movement. Was a star pupil and beloved son figure to Oral Roberts. And his name was Bishop Carlton Pearson. And, you know, African American, came from Pentecostal parents, Pentecostal grandparents, you know, speaking in tongues, rolling on floors, the works. And he had this huge megachurch following in Tulsa, or Oklahoma City, or wherever. And he was honest about things, and he did a lot of soul searching, and he said, A, I will not hate gay people, because God made them, and he was coming from his own theological tradition. And he said, secondly, it occurs to me that there's no devil and there's no hell. And that's all there was to it. And he was driven out of his church with just about whips and chains. Now, on the other hand, how many people are remaining faithful to Bishop Long in the face of these allegations? And I find that dichotomy kind of fascinating, because people, I get the sense that people who are seriously invested in this authoritarian evangelical movement will tolerate personal shortcomings more quickly than they will tolerate doctrinal differences. It's kind of like the thing with Christine O'Donnell, Sandra. People on our side who don't understand the right-wing fundamentalist religion industry evangelicism, who don't know the code, who don't hear the dog whistles, they don't understand that to a fundy, I used to be a witch is not a damning statement, because then she gets to say, but I got saved.
Right.
And they'll forgive anything as long as you said, you know, Jesus told me I'm okay.
Well, I mean, speaking of her, like we had discussed, Bob, it's all sort of, they're like, oh, so what if she's spending her money? Have you noticed that we were right about the tenor of the attack?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Several articles sort of challenging the idea that using her campaign funds in that way is a problem. And like I told you, I don't think that it will be in the end.
No, she won't. Again, you know, I hate to sound like a broken record, but, you know, what's true is true. I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. It's okay if you're a Republican.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's incredible to watch. And I'm just sort of, anyway, I don't know. I just, the Bishop thing was just killing me. You know, I just thought, wow. That'll be an interesting one to see how it plays out, if he steps down, you know, whatever. But people stay sucked up to those people. I mean, they really do develop a sort of cult-like following, these frightening.
And that is, you know, ultimately that is the meaning of a cult of personality.
Mm.
You'll tolerate, you know, you'll tolerate anything from a cult leader as long as they stay true dogmatically and doctrinally.
Yeah.
You know, remember Jimmy Swaggart. Jesus, what wasn't he doing with hookers?
Yeah.
And so all he has to do is sit down behind the piano and say, I have sinned against you, and cry a little bit, and the money kept flowing.
Oh, no, and that guy, that was a show. That was Showtime. Popcorn with him.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
I was like, are you kidding me with this dude? Yeah, you're right. But don't ordain a woman, but you're actually kicked out of the Catholic Church.
Yeah, let's don't do that.
Quickly. Yeah, anyway, listen, did you get that email about the Walmart thing?
Yeah, I did. I've got it here in front of me. Walmart CEO provides the starkest visual of the modern breadline yet.
That one just made me feel kind of ill.
Well, now I'm all sort of sociology curious.
Yeah.
And I gotta go do this. And the point being that, the Walmart CEO said last week, and this is the quote, I don't need to tell you that our customer remains challenged.
Mm.
I guess that's corporate speak, Sandra, for broke.
Yeah, it's too much, that.
Yeah. You need not go farther than one of our stores on midnight at the end of the month. And it's real interesting to watch. God. It's interesting. You know, like going to the zoo. It's real interesting to watch. About 11 p.m., customers start to come in and shop, fill their grocery basket with basic items, baby formula that may now be poisoned with beetle parts, milk, bread, eggs, and eggs that may be toxic.
I know.
And continue to shop and mill about the store until midnight when government electronic benefits cards get activated. And then the checkout starts and occurs, and our sales for those first few hours on the first of the month are substantially and significantly higher.
And those would be the people who get the first RFID chips put in their asses.
Oh yeah, well, and you know they'll give them a free Happy Meal the ticket to, you know, well, just lean over here and yeah.
And a Coke can that'll talk to them. They'll be the first people to get that technology. Anyway, it's not funny. It's horrific. I thought that for the CEO, it just sort of made me feel sick. It's like, ew, you know, does this tell you anything else besides it being a challenge, you MF-er? You know what I mean?
Yep. It's a challenge.
A challenge, you know. And then, I know you probably didn't get a chance to read it, but that whole business with the G. Willikers, Americans don't want to live in a country where the top two people own everything. Big surprise, right?
Well, it's right. Like, we didn't know this.
No, I just thought it was really, it's just really, I mean, the actual study is real quick. It's only like 13 pages, and it's interesting, but it's sort of like, well, yeah, anyone with common sense is going to pick discrepancies like they have in Sweden as opposed to this madness that's going on here. But the other thing that's interesting is the sheer brainwashing that's going on then. If Americans actually think the rich aren't as rich as they are, that's a problem.
It absolutely is.
And there's a point where education needs, I mean, I appreciate that's being done, but it's sort of like intuitively everyone should know what time it is. But you want to believe otherwise because the reality is so horrible. Is that what's going on?
I think that's a big part of it.
People need to wake up. I think people really need to start coming.
Well, again, not to just sit here and rehash my previous rant or anything, but that's why we have to have our broccoli behind the little puddle of chocolate pudding, because we can't take this straight. If we really, you know, I saw an earlier story today. Poverty numbers much worse than they appear.
Well, yeah, of course. Yeah.
Duh.
Oh, yeah, no, I mean, yes. 22,000 to 28,000, what's the damn difference? And that's millions more people, you see. In fact, anything below 30, to me, would just be Yeah, I mean, the line they draw is really arbitrary, and it's not really, it's pretty nonsensical.
And, well, you know, it's like I said in response to your emailing of that article from, what was it, the L.A. Times about the health insurers.
Yeah.
Yeah. They've, now that the certain elements of the health insurance bill kicked in today, the big health insurers, this from the L.A. Times, saying in California, well, we're just going to stop selling new child-only policies. First of all, the idea of a child-only policy is sickening. What the hell ever happened to family coverage?
Well, no, and also I have to agree with what you wrote to me. Yeah, sort of made me step back a bit and think, oh, yeah, no, you know, you make a good point with that it's just sort of exposing what they really are, and maybe that might be beneficial, at least in the long run, because if they're not going to do the business, someone's going to have to take a slack. And the only entity able to is the government, right?
Right, and therefore, for this kind of coverage for children, because they say, you know, people will just, you know, those filthy consumers, they'll just wait till their children get sick and then they'll buy a policy. Well, you know, what kind of parents do they think we are?
And not only that, but what kind of system? I mean, what do they hear? What they sound like? You know, where are we living?
Right. Well, you know, just sign that, you know, just take the insurance executive and let him go to Walmart at midnight and watch the challenged people.
Well, no, but it's
the same thing.
But it's just so sick. It's like between that and that horrible ex-governor from Arkansas comparing a burnt-down house to someone who has a chronic illness. You heard that whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was that was just mind-numbing to me. I can't even understand how the hell they come up with this stuff and how people accept that, oh, yeah, that's right, as a human being.
Well, hey, you want another one?
God.
Are you ready? Do you think you can take one more? Because I'll drop one here on you that'll make you flat-out scream.
Well, let's hear this one.
Okay, I got Sharon Angle for you. And she's pissed off about health care because she's being put upon. Here we go.
Take off the mandates for coverage in the state of Nevada and all over the United States. But here, you know what I'm talking about. You're paying for things that you don't even need. They just passed the latest one is everything that they want to throw at us now is covered under autism. So that's a mandate that you have to pay for. How about maternity leave? I'm not going to have any more babies, but I sure get to pay for it on my insurance. Those are the kinds of things that we want to get rid of.
Charming, isn't it?
Well, no, because, yeah, it's just incredible. But the sort of adverse selection, you know, you shouldn't have to be dealing with this with health care. You know, adverse selection and moral hazard. I mean, those two things and health care should not even be in the same conversation. But because we're in this horrific, I don't know what system this is.
What the hell is that? I mean, what the whole idea of insurance is shared risk.
Well, no, at least, yeah.
If you start talking insurance reform, that's what they tell you.
Well, unless you happen to be some family of some dead-ass soldier and you have to take a annuity payment instead of a lump sum because Prudential is making 5% on your 1%. You heard about that story?
Yeah, I did.
You know, I mean...
And then you watch the J.D. Wentworth commercials on TV and you get 20 cents on the dollar when you get sick of the annuity payment.
Yeah, right, but this is what we're up against. And,
Sharon Angle and the rest of these filthy teabaggers come out and say this kind of stuff, and there's nobody there to challenge them.
No, it's,
you know, okay, Sharon, you're not going to have any more babies. You think you might get breast cancer? Because you're certainly in that risk group, sweetie. Well, you know what? I'm a guy. I ain't got them. Why should I have to carry your dead ass?
And stretch it to public education, you know. Well, I don't have any kids. Why should I?
That's not even a stretch, Sandra. That's where this all comes from.
Oh, no, I'm just saying, but this is the The whole
I mean, that's the genesis of this, I don't want to pay for anything for anybody else. The original argument against public education among these right-wingers and teabaggers and what have you, it expands outward from the education argument that came into the vogue with all the white flight away from the public schools when they founded all their Christian academies.
Right, so the darker the public school system gets,
like the less whitey wants to pay for it.
Right, with any other sort of program in this country, which is, you know, what goes on. But speaking of, well, but who cares about public education when you have Facebook CEO giving $100 million? So I think everything's okay now, Bob. Did you hear about that?
Yeah, we're all good.
Yeah, everything's wonderful in Newark, except for the fact that the whole impotence of this is to destroy public schools. That, I'm sorry, I don't care how much money you get from these people. What I hear, hedge funds are salivating at the idea of charter schools. I know that the system is about to get destroyed.
Exactly.
And that's what's going on. If hedge funds are interested in charter schools, then that means it's the next.
Well, I mean, just in the last, right, just in the last few days, okay, Senator Burr, you know that creep, right, from North Carolina, Richard Burr.
Oh, yeah.
He says he's got concerns about disability assistance for veterans that have heart disease caused by Agent Orange. In other words, he wants to get rid of that. Let's see, teabagging candidate Ken Buck. In Colorado, has said that he wants to privatize veterans' health care. Let's see. I got another one here. I know I do. Joe Miller, the goon in Alaska. Social Security is something the federal government shouldn't have gotten into. It's something that's best reserved to the states. It's a paradox. You're exactly right. And so how do we deal with that as a nation? You know, when I look at the Constitution and I look at what it provides for, certain powers are listed. The Tenth Amendment says the powers aren't listed, that those powers are reserved to the states, so it's a quandary. Government shouldn't have gotten into the Social Security business. In other words, government shouldn't get into the promote the general welfare business that it's specifically constitutionally empowered to do. But you know what? What I just said to you and what you understand and everybody on the, in the Horn family understands, Sandra, you can't explain that to a bagger.
Well, no, but see, you made a really good point last night. I can't remember the context of the conversation, but you're talking about the intergenerational destruction of knowledge about how things are. So when that takes place, then you can get the Reagan Democrats or this teabagging shit. Because everyone who knew what it was like before is gone. Weren't you talking about that yesterday?
Yeah, that's a recurring theme, and it just, you know,
it comes from
having a grandmother born in 1894.
Yeah, well, no, it's just sort of, you know, either you have to find this out on your own, or you become a victim of this. You're so right about that, because the way Social Security has morphed into something that needs to be given to Wall Street and not understood as an insurance program, it just boggles my mind.
Yeah, the idea that it's another get rich quick scheme. Oh, you can make your fortune on Wall Street with your Social Security money. Ooh, look out, you're gonna be an internet billionaire.
Yeah.
I hate that crap.
It's incredible.
But there's layers within layers here, Sandra, because for instance, I just referenced the promote the general welfare, and you know, it's not just in the preamble, it's actually in the body of the Constitution. But this country has been taught to think that every time they hear the word welfare, what does that mean?
It means that some darkie is getting something that they shouldn't.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, if you mention it, that's not what the founders meant.
Right, of course, because of that, you know, it's just been, yeah, it's incredible. The stupidity and the ignorance is really hard to battle against. And you combine that with permanent job insecurity, man, I'm gonna have to upgrade the shotgun for real, though.
Yeah, mine's riot flavored, short barrel, 12 gauge.
Well, yeah, that's the, yeah, you know, no. I sort of drift towards the rifle because you just point and shoot.
No, that's your shotgun.
Well, that's what I mean, but I mean, I'm not into handguns and stuff because they go through.
No, seriously, our home defense weapon is a shotgun.
You know, because, yeah, but.
Goes in like a baseball, comes out like a basketball. And doesn't go through walls real bad.
Right, because I know that some of these handguns are pretty.
Oh, my God, a 9mm round will do 2,000 feet per second or more?
Oh, my God, yeah, anyway. And plus, you know, don't you have to kind of know how to hold the damn thing?
Well, yeah, you do.
I mean, and, you know, so that's like an issue for me. I don't, yeah.
Oh, but you can be taught. You know, look, I'll never forget when I gave Agnes her engagement gun.
Oh, yeah.
I gave her, it was a lovely thing. We've since gotten rid of it after the kids were born. But there was a reason for her to have it. It was a Ruger, and it had nice rubber grips and a stainless steel body. It was a wheel gun. It would chamber either .38 caliber or .357. And I'll never forget when we took her out to the range to shoot it. You know the silhouette of the bad guy that they shoot on the cop ranges?
Yeah.
Okay, well, we put one of those up for her, and, right. and we're showing her how to hold it, you know, Angie Dickinson style.
Oh, no, that's crazy.
You know, two hands, one hand under the butt, you know. And, right. Yeah, well, no, not for Agnes. We show her that, and then she says, screw that, gets all the Samuel L. Jackson with it sideways, you know, points it downrange at the target, points it right at his head, and shoots the thing's crotch out.
Oh, no. Nice one.
And I'm like, honey, I am yours to command.
Shut the heck up. That's funny. Listen. But seriously, though, you know, because in California, I think, brace yourself, you can only buy one handgun a month, you know. They got pretty strange, you know.
Yeah, it's big government keeping its boot on the neck of law-abiding, want-to-buy-a-gun-a-day gun owners.
No, but of course, I need 12 a year, so that's really,
Well, you know, there's fashion stuff. I mean, Smith & Wesson has one now that's got a baked-on, anodized pink finish and pink grips. It's just as cute as can be.
Well, I'm still
But pink don't go with everything.
Well, I'm still looking at that one I saw in some magazine. It was like some sort of 50mm thing. I mean, it was just huge, okay?
Yeah, around here we call those hand cannons.
Well, it was crazy big, but I could only get one a month here.
Yeah, that's the Israeli-manufactured Desert Eagle.
Well, I don't care what it was. That was some crazy-looking. That looked crazy. I thought, my God, what kind of damage could that do?
Bunch. And the thing is, you can also knock yourself senseless with the recoil. It's a real joy.
I just mean the whole recoil thing. Anyway, I don't know. I just think that if you're going to be dealing with the firearms, you kind of need to know a little bit about it, huh? It
comes in handy. You know, years and years ago, the New York City Police Department switched over from whatever it was they were using, which was probably a .45 or maybe a .357 wheel gun. They switched over to Glocks. Because Glocks are all sexy and stuff.
Oh, Glocks, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Only problem is Glock doesn't have what you and I would commonly think of as a safety.
Oh, shut up. Wow.
It's got the trigger. Inside the trigger guard, there's the trigger, and inside the trigger itself, there's a little notch, and you pull the notch in, and then you can pull the trigger. No safety. And for the first year or so that the NYPD had those Glocks, you had all kinds of officers shooting their feet.
Oh, no, that's horrible. What?
Because they'd put their hand down to draw the weapon. They'd get their hand around the trigger guard and be coming out with it and disabled officer down at the range.
Listen, that sounds a bit special. Did they rectify that problem?
Well, yeah, they just eventually learned that, you don't put your hand on the trigger till you got the damn thing out of the holster.
Oh, no.
No, I wouldn't own a Glock. I have never owned a Glock. I won't own a Glock. Bart Cop loves them, not me.
Yeah, no. And this conversation is making me stay with the shotgun realities then.
Oh, yeah. Beautiful. You know, there's a great little thing. It's called, see, this is what happens when you're a hillbilly liberal from West Virginia. You can advise your California friends on gun ownership.
Listen. Listen, I got a pen. You tripping? I sure do.
And you can buy them at Walmart too. You know, maybe at about 11:59 before the NRA card recharges. There's a thing called a snake charmer, and it's a 410 shotgun with a pistol grip.
Okay, so it's a shorty.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, no, you know that.
And that thing's beautiful because, you know, you load it with the right shot. It doesn't go through walls. It will, you know, on the front end of the bad guy, it looks like a hole about the size of a baseball, and on the way out, it's about the size of a basketball, and everything in between is a mess.
Right.
Because remember that most shootings take place, you know, it's not like in the movies, bang, bang, and, you know, you jump down behind the barrel and you jump, bang, bang. No, no.
Yeah.
Most shootings take place at a range of less than 36 inches.
And that's a play and plug, right? Or a point and shoot, I should say.
Yeah, play and plug. I like that, too.
Well, I keep that in mind because I just think shit is going to be stupid. And if you put on top of the fact that now they want to legalize the smoke, you know, I already had visions of what I'm going to be bumping into at the various stores at night when these people get to, you know, for the first year.
Yeah, when the munchies kick in.
And how ridiculous it's going to be the first year, how high, it's going to be a bunch of high people everywhere.
I love how Big Pharma, though, is getting in bed with, big law enforcement and big booze. Booze is kicking in big money to defeat that in California.
Yeah, but the latest poll, is starting to run away.
Is it really?
Starting to run away. It's like 57 to 40 something or another. I mean, it's that kind of distance. And they're predicting that maybe Boxer might be able to get reelected, you know, on the strength of that.
Oh, my God.
All the people coming out to vote for that, it's going to be all sorts.
So, in other words, it's the liberal equivalent of putting a let's hate on the gays measure.
Yeah, that's what I said. That's what I was telling somebody else. I said, shit, Meg Whitman might lose behind this if you get enough.
Yeah, because everybody knows Jerry can roll a blunt.
That's right, and I'm telling you, every person, young person, is trying to figure out how to register for the first time. Trust and believe that.
Oh, I do. I believe it.
I mean, I shouldn't laugh. I mean, but I just think it's just my own sort of observation. I think loads of people, as it gets closer, are going to be like, yes.
Well, you know how everybody wanted to go to California to get married? Be prepared. Get ready for a freak invasion.
Well, the thing is that it's funny, the pharmaceuticals, because they're offside now, but I can imagine them running back over when they can figure out how to create Franken cannabis and sell it to us.
And you know what? They will. I wouldn't be surprised if the research has already been done.
And that's the only downside to it to me, because, okay, what, we trade the Mexican mafia for the corporate mafia, you know.
Right.
What's the difference? But anyway, that's sort of down the road. It's more interesting for them to decriminalize drugs at this point. It's always the best route to me. I'm not saying they need to decriminalize coke and heroin and stuff, but I mean pot?
Yeah, I mean, come on. It's a weed.
I get the impression that it's safer than alcohol at this point.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt it is. You know, I had three marvelous days. One of the best parts of our otherwise sort of misbegotten trip to Las Vegas were the 3 days that we shared. You know, we were in our booth there telling people about mountaintop removal, and that part of the trip was magnificent. It was the broadcast part that was a total abortion. But next to us were some representatives from LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition.
Oh, okay.
And those guys were cool. I mean, there was a guy who had been an advisor to a law enforcement advisor to the mayor in Baltimore. He had been a major on the Maryland State Police, been in the city force, and dude had just seen so much misery, and he began to notice that it was all brought about not by the fact that folks were smoking dope, but by the fact that law enforcement was so batshit crazy that folks were smoking dope.
I mean, you can't even imagine. I mean,
and he was a person of color, and he was like, you know, I'm tired of seeing my neighborhood shot up over this crap.
Well, yeah, I mean, you have like a lot of groups that may normally not be for something like this coming out for it, based on the numbers of people of color who are thrown in prison. You see, I mean, they think that it could reduce that aspect of the drug sentencing law. So, I mean, that's the main reason why I'm voting for it, is that aspect of it. I mean, the rest of it, I'm not really too keen on everyone smoke all the time. But to me, I don't know how much you ever got done being high, but trust me.
I had a lot of great ideas.
I have a lot of great ideas while I'm trying to run to stuff my fat face. That's about the extent of it, so, you know.
Dude, you're going to eat that. Yeah.
Yes, really quite bad, but anyway, listen, I'll let you go. I got to...
All right, well, have a wonderful weekend.
Yeah, and, you know, good luck for the conference.
Well, thanks a lot. You know, check out the rerun stream or the live stream or whatever if you're up and moving around at 7 in the morning out there. We might just be hollering and raising a ruckus in D.C., and you might even be able to hear it.
Oh, and also, I can vote for you every day, right?
Yes, indeed, you can.
Okay, let me go and do that now while I'm thinking about it. All right, Bob, have a safe trip.
Thanks, Sandra. See ya.
Bye.
Bye now. Yeah, I really appreciate all of you voting at BourdainMediumRaw.com under my Dancing Around the Monolith with a Spoon essay. Yeah, that thing's moving right up. We'll be at 500 votes soon. I had a really, really nice note from Brandon in Brooklyn on my Facebook page earlier today talking about, you know, what a great opportunity this is to sort of indirectly introduce folks to the horn. And, you know, wouldn't it be cool if this could be a thing that folks in liberal radio sort of did, advancing one of their own? I think it would. I really do. Because I think beyond, I'm not real good at thinking about myself, quite frankly. That's one of the things that makes me kind of bad at this business, because I don't have the kind of ego that says, well, with one half my brain tied behind my back, and the other hand in a box of Oxycontin. I can't do that. I can't stand not being candid. I can't stand not being real. You know, I don't, you get the idea. So let's move onward. Okay. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob Haven.
Hey, Haven, how are you?
I'm doing okay, doing fine. Yeah, let's see, I'm just looking over a bunch of stuff. I was, listening to you all, and well, I've been listening off and on for the past couple of hours, and the Bishop Eddie Long thing is really interesting to me, because I don't know, it points out something that I hadn't noticed about hypocrisy, and this is something that somebody had brought to my attention. The number one issue that Jesus addresses throughout the four Gospels just keeps coming up over and over again.
That would be poverty, wouldn't it?
Well, actually, I thought it was hypocrisy.
Well, that's pretty high on his hit parade, too.
Right. Yeah. But poverty, yeah, that's another very big thing. Yeah. But hypocrisy works its way into this Bishop Eddie Long story like crazy. And, you know, I've always thought, I grew up here in North Carolina. I don't think the megachurch that we had was Jim and Tammy. That was
sure.
Charlotte. Yeah. Yeah. But we don't really have megachurches up here, membership of 10,000 and that sort of thing. But one thing that I've always kind of thought is that if a church has a publicist, it is not really a church. I'm not sure what you call it, but I personally would not refer to that as a church.
Yeah, well.
I mean, a publicist, a media handler, a media buyer, because a publicist isn't that's someone who really, who is supposed to help you look good in spite of yourself in the public. And I just, that seems really out of place to me. A church with a CEO a church with a every church has a treasurer, every church has a head of the deacon board, the usher board, the building fund, and that sort of thing.
Right.
A church with a publicist is right off the bat.
Well, see, you mentioned Jim and Tammy, and that takes me back to the late great Sam Kennison, who said he wanted to meet him. He wanted to be present at the pearly gates when Jim and Tammy showed up, and he heard Jesus holler, "Where did I say to build me a water slide?" And it's true, you know. But it's a disease that so many, especially of the evangelical variety, catch. Just here at my home, the Baptist church that my family, but not I, my ancestral family has attended for 130 years. That church is building a new gymnasium or something. They tore it for years and years. As a little boy, when we would travel up here, there was a brick home that was the parsonage that sat in front of my grandmother's home, my other grandmother. And that's just the way it was. Well, they've torn down the parsonage, and now they're building some big brick structure or big block structure with a peaked metal roof that certainly looks tall enough to house a basketball court, bowling alley, that kind of thing. And what it is, Haven, is it has nothing to do with faith. It has to do with trying to keep the money within the church. They do it under the guise of, we want to provide a family-friendly environment so that they don't have to go out amongst the heathen.
Right.
But what it's really all about is keeping the money, and it's taken directly from like full-service tourism hotels and stuff. You want to keep the money on the property.
Right. Well, I was prepared to give that the benefit of the doubt because, I mean, you have a situation where, you know, you have to change with the times, necessarily. And the parsonage is not, not necessarily very 21st century.
Well, and it ain't making no money either.
Yeah.
I mean, I have yet to see a Baptist church that didn't like more money. And, I mean, this is just a little tiny Baptist church, and they've got millions, and they're sinking it into this building. Oh, it's mind-blowing.
Well, who built it? I mean, are members building it? Are young people getting their...
No. They've hired some nice non-union contractors.
Oh.
You know, the kind Jesus would approve of, because we know that Jesus was a capitalist.
As well as a carpenter.
Well, he was a carpenter contractor. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that what's going to happen with this, I didn't listen to the show that Sandra listened to, but I listened to a different show this afternoon, and this is a huge story because even if you're not a member, well, most are not a member of the church, but, you've seen this guy, I've seen this guy on TV, just kind of cruising through the stations, trying to get to Link TV. And, Link TV is embedded amongst all of these religious channels there. And I've listened to the guy. He sounds fairly coherent. I didn't hear him go after the gays. But the whole idea of a giant church, I'm not familiar with. I grew up here in Durham. We have Granville County. That's where my parents are from. And these are tiny churches have maybe like 400 people, that sort of thing. Even in Durham, maybe 3,000 or 4,000 at tops. And so a giant church that looks like a, the Vatican for all I know is really foreign. And I have a natural kind of suspicion of it. even if it is black and even if the guy talks black and, you know, I'm comfortable around a bunch of, like, around my, you know, black people, I feel like a church like that is just a corporate thing. And that makes me very
uncomfortable.
Sorry. Uncomfortable.
And see, that's the exact opposite, Haven, of what we used to experience where I grew up. You know, we'd sit on our hands and get railed at by the preacher and stand up and sing. And then, the choir would sing Just As I Am at the end. And we'd all, you know, there was the running competition among all the preachers to see who could let his congregation out soon enough to get first in line at the cafeteria where everybody ate on Sunday.
Right.
But on the few occasions that, some of us more, shall we say, adventuresome little white people, wandered into an AME church or something like that, it was like the doors on a wonderland opening up. The folks in there were actually enjoying Sunday. And we would come back and say, you know, why don't we have any of that? Well, you know, we just don't do things that way. And so that line was drawn pretty darn quick.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, we'll see how this plays out. I think, like kind of what you had mentioned before, what's going to happen is the church members' money will move over to these people who have had these lawsuits. It'll probably take maybe a year or so. And nobody will admit to anything necessarily. And probably he's going to have to do some rebuilding and some rebranding, you know, for a church doing rebranding. But he's going to have to do that. And, he'll probably go cruising along for another, maybe another 10 years or so.
I think you're probably right. And I think there'll be a quiet little settlement that'll have a non-disclosure agreement inside it. And there you go.
Yeah. I had, this is a different subject. You, were talking about HR 6113.
Yes.
And I looked that thing up, and at the end of this, I read what you were saying. Nation's electricity needs, the remaining amount of coal is used to produce, among other things, steel, plastic, synthetic fibers, medicine, and coke. K-O-C-O-K-E.
Yes.
Is that really Coca-Cola?
No.
What does that mean?
To coke coal. You cannot make steel without coke. And coke is coal that has been baked in an almost airless environment so that it is reduced to almost pure carbon. Before the discovery of the coking process, charcoal was used. But you must have intense concentrations of carbon inside your iron, inside your molten iron in order to create steel. You know, big deal. Anybody who's ever seen an iron skillet rust and seen a steel skillet not rust knows there's a big difference between steel and iron.
Okay.
And that's what that is. But what they don't tell you in that, and it is the God's honest truth, is that the vast majority of that other uses coal is being put to work in China and in India. So there's nothing national security about it. If you can say anything good about the exportation of mountaintop removal coal, Haven, it is that it is providing some degree of balance to a completely out of whack Chinese trade deficit. But you know what? Fixing the trade deficit with coal is no fix, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, that's no fix at all.
But, you know, again, this thing won't pass. It probably won't even get out of committee. But it's, you know, it's a dog whistle to Don Blankenship and the fiends of coal back here in Appalachia.
Right. And it's not doing anything for the trade deficit because, for one thing, they are using that to make things to sell back, to value-added stuff to sell back over here.
Bingo. And one more thing, and it's a story that I haven't seen it get a lot of play, but I picked it up out of the New York Times. Headline, amid tension, China blocks rare earth exports to Japan.
Yeah, I heard about that. I didn't think much of that story, though.
Well, it's interesting, though, because China has control of the vast majority of rare earth elements. So I looked up rare earth elements. You know what a geek I am. And that's scandium, yttrium, lanthanum, cerium, praseodymium, neodymium, promethium. And these are all things that are incredibly necessary inside most the high-tech items. For instance, neodymium goes into the magnets of really high-quality microphones. But these are things that we can't do without. And the thing is, it's further proof that the global trade economy is completely one-sided. And they're more than happy to let let Japan go to hell as a means of showing them who the big dog is on the global block now.
I think that everybody in the Chinese top level government has at least two or three copies of Sun Tzu. And they keep it open to the part where it says, if you can defeat your enemy without firing a shot, then that is the best.
That is the ultimate victory. You're absolutely right, Haven.
Yeah.
Well, I got to get out of here because Rick Smith's on his way, but it's awful good to talk to you.
All right. Yes, sir.
All right. Take care, Haven. Bye now.
Yep.
Calling from North Carolina, that's Haven. It's about 4.5 minutes before the hour. Time for me to get out of here. Rick Smith is on his way live from behind the Scrapple Curtain in Pennsylvania. Your chance to actually let people up there who've never heard a liberal hear a liberal. You can't overestimate the value of outreach like that. Thanks, everybody, for your comments. I'm sorry about the blinking lights I did not get to, but when I get back on either Wednesday or Thursday, we'll kick it up all over again. And a reminder, on Monday, do tune in, and we will have live coverage. Cross your fingers, because some of this depends on people like AT&T and Sprint, but we'll have live coverage, and hopefully even Ustream coverage, of the Appalachia Rising March and Rally in Washington, D.C., beginning at 10 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Thanks to everybody who makes all this go. First and foremost, thanks to everybody who contributes. We are still a long way out from anything approaching $2,500 for the month of September. And that would mean that we've got 7 days to make that up, most of which I will not be on the air. So please remember that if you've got a few bucks laying around. The button, the PayPal button, is at headonradionetwork.com, as well as the snail mail address if you prefer to work that way. Thanks to all the folks who make the program go. John Fox, who is on the road touring rock and roll tech roadie right now. In Australia. He wrote me earlier and told me about the gig. First gig. Must have been just crazy from what he said. He's our webmaster as well, our web designer. And one of these days he'll get back to being a radio show host too, which he's pretty doggone good at in his own right. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org single-handedly saved liberal talk on the internet with WhiteRoseSociety.org. Lottie is our chat room moderator. Gene and Susan are our news ninjas. Texas Betsy is our blogger. Matt Osborne, who will be joining me at Appalachia Rising, is our Southeast correspondent. OsborneInc.com. Reverbo is our op-ed columnist. Cavalcade of Crazy at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. My head writer is David in Tennessee. The Head on Radio Network, the horn, comes to you also through the continued generous support of the network by Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org, an integral partner in Appalachia Rising, AppalachiaRising.org. They are, in fact, the hardest working, bravest people I know. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you?
Go ahead. Make my day.